Thank you, choir. Whenever we come to this story in the second chapter of John, the marriage at Cana, and Jesus' first miracle, we Methodists get a little embarrassed, don't we? We sure do. We Methodists, after all, don't serve wine in our communion. We were the leaders of the temperance movement that caused all sorts of problems in this country. And we continue to be leaders in the battle against alcohol abuse in our nation. So when we hear that Jesus turns 150 gallons of water into 750 bottles of the most expensive wine, we get a little embarrassed, don't we? What do we do with this story? A group of Baptist deacons went into the Santa Fe from Glorieta Baptist Assembly for dinner. The waitress asked them, "Well, do you gentlemen want anything from the bar?" Well, everybody kind of hammered and stammered, and so one of the elder Baptists spoke up. "Honey, we're all Baptist deacons here, and we can't drink in front of each other." But of course, we have this favorite joke from President Clinton. He tells this joke. He says, "What's the difference between an Arkansas Baptist and an Arkansas Methodist?" He says, "Arkansas Methodists say hi to each other in the liquor store." Now, I don't know about California Methodists, because I'm just getting to know you, so I don't know what you do here. But truly, this story is not about wine or about alcohol abuse. But I think there is another point that this story comes first in the Gospel of John. It's about changing water. Are we having some problems here, right? Let me see. It is about changing water, which is a perfectly great thing, into something even better, which symbolizes happiness, joy, and celebration of life. I'm going to share a story from one of my favorite TV programs of my growing years, Star Trek. I didn't like the second generation, the next generation, but here is an episode from the first year of that, the next generation. In the 16th episode, it's entitled Home Soil. Captain Picard and the crew are coming to a new planet where they are starting the new Garden of Eden. When they get there, they find that the crew has been having problems with another life form, alien life form on the planet. So finally, they get their universal translator working. And the first words that the captain and the crew hear are these words: "Ugly bags of mostly water. Ugly bags of mostly water." And of course, Captain Picard doesn't know what it means, but Lieutenant Data says, "Captain, that's them describing us, human beings." And after all, isn't that the truth? We are, they say, 90% water in a container. So to the aliens, we are just ugly bags of mostly water. Perfect description for most of us, right? Maybe Star Trek has a point for us in this story. We human beings are mostly water. Aliens may call us ugly bags of that. But now these mostly ugly bags of water are becoming beautiful bottles of the most expensive wine. We don't have to go too far in the gospel stories of how Jesus transformed people, or how people were changed whenever they got into Jesus' presence. People who are ordinary, they became extraordinary. People who are unethical, like Levi, the tax collector, became a solid citizen. Peter, who was fearful and disloyal, becomes a courageous witness to the truth. selfish Zacchaeus turns into a generous official. Nicodemus was a joyless religious man, but now he learns how to respond to the Spirit, who is like the wind. Something happens to the water whenever it is in Jesus' presence. This was the miracle of the water into wine. Not some chemical change in the structures of water, but of us, people, mostly water, changing into beautiful sons and daughters of God. And it didn't matter what kind of water we held. It could be impure, it could be stale, it could be stagnant, it could be dirty and smelly. Jesus turned it all into life-giving, joy-giving wine of love. Mary somehow knew this about her son Jesus. It isn't often that you find a mother so proud of her son that in fact she would tell others, listen to what he says. But Mary has seen and observed that something happened to people when Jesus was in their presence. Jesus had been with people. He changed them. But not only did he change them, he taught them how to become great. Yes, Jesus knew that people wanted to be important. That's wonderful, he said. He knew that people wanted to be recognized, and that's wonderful too. He knew that people wanted to be great in life, and that was great. We ought to be great in life. Yet Jesus, Mary noticed, had a different way of being great. Jesus had learned the most important truth. Anyone who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's what Jesus practiced. And Mary saw this and told the people, do what he tells you. By this definition of greatness, it means that everyone and anyone can be great in life. Because everyone can serve. On Thursday night, I caught a glimpse of Late Night with Jimmy Fallon show. I don't usually stay up that late to watch late night shows, but this was on Thursday night, and I guess on Thursday nights, Mr. Fallon has what is called the Thursday night hashtags. He will send out a tweet. And this week's tweet, for the last couple weeks, has been, I admit it. People were tweeting back, sending him a message, telling them, I admit it. So there was this tweet from Paul Trafka. He wrote him back saying, to impress my friends, I bought a poster of Hulk Hogan. I framed it, and then I wrote, you are the strongest of them all, Paul. You didn't get that, right? We go to all lengths to impress people, to tell people how great we are, to be accepted. For Jesus to be great, you only need a heart of grace, a soul generated by love. And you can be that servant, one who serves. Mary knew this, so she says to us, do what he tells you, because when you do that, you too can be great. As Obama begins his second term tomorrow, we Americans have an opportunity to reflect on what makes America great. One of our Methodist bishops, Bishop Woody White, on every year of Martin Luther King's birthday, writes him a birthday letter. So on this 15th of January, he wrote to Martin Luther King, who would have been 84 years old had he lived today. Bishop White writes to him, I write this year as we will observe the 50th anniversary of your I Have a Dream speech given at the historic March on Washington, August 28, 1963. Martin, on that day, you began to melt a nation's heart. Martin, this past year has been, on the one hand, a time of accomplishments as we watch the nation moving closer to a full realization of the dream. On the other hand, we have also heard ugly, mean-spirited, racist rhetoric that harkens back to days that many had believed were long since gone. However, a new American narrative is emerging. Millions of Americans of all races, ethnicities, and religions are writing this new narrative. Martin, your dream is becoming, and in many ways has become, a reality. Your dream continues to be a fitting vision of an American future, a dream not only deeply rooted in the American dream, but in the will of God at creation. Happy birthday, Martin. My wife, Chris, and I were at the inauguration on the morning of January 20th, 2009. It was one of the coldest days of that winter. Only 19 degrees when we got up, but it was colder because of the wind chill factor. You guys don't know anything about that, right? But it was really cold. And by noon, it never got over 28 degrees. When we got up that morning with 1.8 million people and got on the metro to get into Washington, D.C., we were ready to see the American dream come true right before our eyes. And it did. I had never seen so many people on wheelchairs, with walkers, on canes, mothers and fathers with babies on strollers. Everyone of all colors, all backgrounds were out there. I had a chance to speak to many of our seniors, and they told me that they had been to Washington 50 years before, 1963, and now, right before their eyes, something new was happening in America. I stood beneath the Washington Monument because that was as close as I could get to the inauguration. Christy had a ticket, so she was very close. But as I stood under the Washington Monument, I remember the black and white video of Martin Luther King, a 34-year-old preacher, preaching in 1963. At that moment, I saw something happen to my eyes because I began to see America changing into color. Because here around me are all people of all races and backgrounds, all ages, dreaming and living a new reality. With millions on my side, I saw us, our water changing, we becoming the great wine that God wants us to be. At the March on Washington, Martin Luther King prophesied, "I have a dream that one day that this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold this truth to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, by the content of their character. I have a dream today." And then he finished up with a flourish saying, "This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, 'My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside let freedom ring.'" Then he continues, "And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. We live with the promise of this great nation. And as the Church of God, we hold the promise of water changing into wine. Does our church show any indication in our life that we serve a God who changes water into wine? 50 years ago, there was no Silicon Valley here, only orchards, small sleepy towns. But today, The entire world is at our doorsteps. We here, Campbell, Silicon Valley, we've become the hub of the world. Our children and we live, play, eat, work with the world's people. God has made our world that much smaller. This has become the global village. So what do people look at when they see us, our church in Campbell? Have we become a place where the world comes to pray together, to live together, where we come to overcome the past hatreds and misunderstandings, the barriers that our parents' generations or the generations back at home held? Do people see our spiritual life as something that turns water into wine, building a new world, new society? Do people feel that we are dreaming as Jesus dreamt, as Martin Luther King dreamt? Our church can also dream. We can become a church that is a house of prayer for all nations, a dream that God had when he began his church. A place where people, all beautiful bags of mostly water, where we come pre-qualified to be great. And we come here learning how to serve so that we can be great, where we can learn to serve each other. This is the reality of our Silicon Valley. This is already the place where our children live. May our church become that place where water turns into wine, where our children will experience the power of God to change, to transform, to love, and to dream. Today, Jesus stands before each one of us, asking us whether we will follow him and pour that water into the water jug to be served, believing that you will change into wine to serve others. And today, Martin Luther King Jr. would point to Jesus, for Martin served Jesus, and in serving Jesus and the people of this nation, Martin's dream has become bigger, and his dream has become our dream, a dream big enough to embrace the whole world. And you and I are part of that dream, if we will serve, if we will love. Ultimately, our greatness doesn't depend on our finances, on our buildings, or our programs. It's us. People may call us ugly bags of mostly water, but what miracles happen when Jesus touches us? When the water turns into wine of joy, of understanding, of forgiveness, of reconciliation and compassion, of selfless service. Let us follow Mary and do what Jesus and Martin tells us by their words and by their deeds. Let us go forth to love and to serve, to be really great. Amen.